Can you imagine what it would be like to be blind or partially sighted 100 years ago? Seeing Our History is an RNIB Scotland project funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund that explores this question in Edinburgh, the Lothians and the Borders. Our volunteers have researched the lives of those referred to as the outdoor blind because they didn't live in blind institutions. In this series of podcasts, you can experience their struggles and successes brought to life through the real experiences of people with sight loss. Moira McMurchie looks at how easy it was for blind and partially sighted people to retain their independence during this period of history.
The Poor Law was the very basic safety net for people facing destitution. It only aided those who were disabled from working. So, for each application for poor relief, it had to differentiate the disabled from the able-bodied. In deciding whether some had a disabling impairment, the Poor Law's definition was often a medical one. But the judgment had profound economic and social implications for the person involved. But everyone is different, and people might define themselves in a variety of different ways. People with sight loss in Edwardian Scotland had their own perspectives on whether they felt dependent or independent. Their situation could, of course, go through various changes during a lifetime. Adults working for the blind asylum, either as inmates or outworkers, were not portrayed as dependents, but as able-bodied and productive workers. They had to conform to rules that regulated their private lives, as well as their working lives. But their claims to independence were often asserted by challenges to those rules. People who were not affiliated to the Blind Asylum came to the attention of the Missions to Outdoor Blind. The missionaries also endeavoured to exert a form of control, a moral one which embraced rational middle-class values. They encouraged religious practice and respectable conduct, but the missionaries were hard-pressed to exercise this kind of control. Many people on the register for Outdoor Blind were hard-pressed to be economically independent, but they were often able to exercise an independence of spirit not possible if they were employed by the Blind Asylum. Ian Hutchison is the research historian for the Seeing Our History project. Ian, are you saying that some blind people were disabled and some were not?
Yes, the blind asylums portrayed their workers as able-bodied. They were earning a wage, and many of them were supporting a family. Poor law officials might see some blind people as able-bodied too, if they could successfully argue this of an individual. It removed their obligation to give them relief in times of hardship. But most importantly, they were blind people who themselves rejected being labelled as disabled.
How did blind people challenge rules?
At the Blind Asylum, periodically they presented petitions to the directors, sometimes with success. Or they would just break the rules anyway, but if caught, could have their wages reduced or they could be dismissed, which meant being unemployed. Outdoor blind people, by contrast, were relatively free spirits. If they did not like the missionaries' attempts to direct their lives, they simply spurned their advances.
If a blind person was in poverty, how could they be independent? This is surely a bit idealistic.
In many cases, yes, you're correct. Extreme poverty might mean admission to the poorhouse, and that also meant complying with rules. However, most people did not live in total isolation, and the presence of supportive family networks could play an important role. This seems to have been particularly true in rural Scotland.
That was Ian Hutchison, the research historian for the Seeing Our History project. One such case of apparent independence in the countryside is that of Robert Ponton. Robert became blind in midlife. Along with the help of his brothers, Robert lived independently until his dying day. Robert was born in 1857 on East Main's farm in Whittingham, East Lothian. His parents were Thomas and Christina. Thomas worked as a shepherd. Robert spent his childhood living in a one-room cottage at Whittingham Home Farm with his parents, four brothers and sisters. His father, Thomas Ponton, died in 1866 of bowel cancer. He was 39. By 1871, at the age of 13, Robert was working as an agricultural labourer along with his 15-year-old brother Thomas. Between 1871 and 1881, Robert's widowed mother, Christina, was recorded as having two more children, George and Alexander. However, as we will learn, this scandal was not all that it seemed. Christina died in 1900. Thomas, Robert and Alexander became the nucleus of the family. Thomas and Alexander still worked in agriculture. However, Robert, now 42, was officially retired. For the first time, he was noted as blind. Christina, their sister, was keeping house for them. She died in 1907. By 1911, the three brothers had moved from East Lothian to Perthshire, where they seemed to find security. Thomas and Alexander remained farmers. Robert was shown as living on private means. But this stability was short-lived. In 1912, Thomas died and Alexander married and moved to Dundee. Robert lived independently until his death in Perth in 1932. He had lived alone for 20 years, and he died alone peacefully in his sleep. He was 74. There is a twist to this tale. All along I've referred to Alexander as Robert's and Thomas's brother. But in reality, he was their sister, Christina's son, their nephew. The story goes that Christina was working as an agricultural labourer when she fell pregnant with her first son, George. A decade later, in 1879, history repeated itself and Alexander was born to Christina. Only on Robert's death certificate is it confirmed that Alexander was indeed their nephew and not their supposed brother. Lizzie Ellicott, one of our research volunteers, has been researching the case of Robert Ponton. Lizzie, you said when Robert was a child there was a family of seven living in a one-room cottage. What would it have been like living in these overcrowded conditions?
Yes, we know that it was a one-room cottage. What it was like for them needs some speculation. This one room that they all lived in was used for cooking, eating, relaxing and sleeping. Children and adults crowding into a couple of box beds built into the wall. Water supply, toilet facilities and laundry would have all been outdoors. The cottage had just one window, and before electricity, this would have made a very dark and dingy place. They may have used candles or oil lamps. As well, it would have been very cold and damp at times. All this combines to make crowded, tough and unhealthy living conditions.
Why was Robert able to stay independent? Would he have been able to without his family?
The extent of Robert's sight loss is not known. However, he was recorded as blind in 1901 and not in 1911, when the census only noted instances of total blindness. This suggests that he may still have had limited vision. If this is true, it would have made life much easier for Robert. For example, he managed to live independently for 2 decades after the death of Thomas and the marriage of Alexander.
What does the cover-up of Christina's illegitimate children tell us about this family?
From the birth of her first child, it seems that Christina's family took her in and supported her through difficult times. Illegitimacy brought great shame to families. Christina's mother shielded her from this by making out that George and Alexander were her children. Even although, as she was a widow, the shame of illegitimacy was then passed to her. Later it seems that Christina's brothers supported her in return for her keeping house.
That was Lizzie Ellicott, one of the research volunteers on the Seeing Our History project.
This podcast is part of a project by RNIB Scotland, supported by the Heritage Lottery Fund, which explores the experiences of outdoor blind people living in Edinburgh, the Borders and the Lothians 100 years ago. For more information about the Seeing Our History project, please go to insightradio.co.uk/seeingourhistory.
Sadie was just 10 when her ma was whisked away to the place for them who've lost their heads, or so they say. She'd led a sad, hard life, domestic servant to her own, then landed in strife in the poorhouse all alone.